This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 225, Monty Python's Contractual Obligation Album. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Larry Nemechek. In this episode, we look back at the full season of Star Trek Picard, share our feelings on the story and creative work, and discuss what the first season's success means for the broader Star Trek franchise. We also take a first look at the recently announced Captain Pike series, Strange New Worlds. So let's step into the Ready Room. Well, Larry, here you are still in the Ready Room after all this time. I guess you've probably been in here doing all your Picard screenings, but one thing makes me really curious. Is it really you, or is this Golem, Larry, that I'm looking at right here?
I'll never tell, Chris. I'll never tell. Excuse me. It's been so long since we've done this. I'm going to dust off a little Stardust City Stardust here off, and yeah. No, this is I've missed being on the mic with you, Chris. This is wild. I can't believe how long it's been.
It's been a long time, and you look younger than ever and refreshed and vibrant. And so I just thought that maybe, you know, you had been put into a new shell, just like J.L. Jean-Luc Picard has
been. Oh, no. How kind of you to say that. There must be something wrong with this, whatever the hell application I'm in today. There's only five things floating around here. Boy, I feel like I've been more through the ringer the last two or three months than ever. What's amazing to me is when Picard started in January, it's like we were in a different, it's like we jumped in a red matter black hole and came out the other end of an alternate universe or something, because we had parties, we had view parties, and, you know, kicked off and then by the end of like 10 episodes, we're not talking 26 or 15 even, 10 episodes later, everybody's watching it from underneath their desks. You know, it's like it's the middle of an earthquake or something, or a tornado, and we're all hunkered down, bunker hunkered. So anyway, I don't think it's had a long-lasting impact on the way people look at the series, but I don't know how anyone can ever forget the first run-through of Picard, like where it started right. And where it ended up. But we've certainly had time for it to filter down and think about it.
I think I tweeted on Friday when I was watching back through Picard to refresh a little bit for this, that hearing the theme music was kind of nostalgic for me because it brought back memories that are only about 3 or 4 months old, but it feels like they're 3 or 4 years old because yeah. I finally got out yesterday and actually went somewhere for the first time since March 25th. And when Picard was airing in first run, I was watching the new episode each week while I was riding the train going back and forth into Tokyo, because people know mm-hmm. I have famously had this 5-hour round trip commute when I was working for this company. And at that time, that's how I was watching it. And here we are 3 months later, and I had not been anywhere since before the series ended. I don't work for that company anymore. I lost that job. I still do the work, but as a freelancer. So I lost that employment as a result mm-hmm. of coronavirus. And many other aspects of my life have also changed, and I've lost things that were an important part of my life since then too. So it seemed like it was so long ago, but it was really just a few months. Anyway, Larry, I think the last time you and I recorded, so since then, Matthew and I did one episode of The Ready Room where we talked about mid-season Picard, and I believe it was right after Stardust City Rag aired. So it was roughly mid-season. I think you and I talked just before the premiere, if I remember correctly. So we haven't really talked about the story itself and how it played out. And now it's over.
The payoff.
So my first question for you would be, looking back at the series, you know, what did you think about the overall story?
I was saying, at the time we did that, we had that first talk, I was just thinking that everything CBS was doing, and not in a cynical way, I was comparing it to as Paramount was ending the filming of Star Trek IV. It's like everybody's watching the rushes and the dailies, and they're getting the sense that you can tell. You can tell when you're in rehearsal on a play. You can tell when you're putting a TV series or a film together. You don't have to have the final edit and the final sweet version or get the first audience test focus, you know, sample group. Mm-hmm. You know when something is clicking and it's going to be awesome. You can also tell when it's not so awesome. Or you can tell when it's, I'm sure we'll find somebody to save this or to make it better. But this is a case, I think, with Picard where everybody was so excited about it. They didn't mind letting that seep in between the lines in the promotion, like Star Trek IV was before they released it. And it just felt golden. All the promotion just felt like they did everything. They hit all the right buttons, all the right keys, all the right tones. Everybody was in love with this show. I kept saying everything is golden, especially compared to only 2 to 3 years before. We'd just been through the meltdown that was the Discovery launch and the online. The regular trolls and bots are combined in with people who had really sincere objections to Discovery, along with the people who knew that this wasn't the best it could be, but people that knew how TV and how production works. And we all knew, or we had a hint at it, how troubled the production launch was. And we all knew it had been, you know, all that labored birth. And Picard was such a contrast to that I was looking forward to it. And then as it unspooled, a lot of people had issues with it, but me, to finally answer your question, there were parts that I can totally draw a big red circle around what I didn't like or what I thought was a waste of time or was way overblown. But for most of the time, I was happy with it. I thought it was fun. I still sense that a lot of people, me included, and writers included, but I still sense a lot of people were still adjusting to how serialized storytelling works and how Star Trek looks in a serial. I think it was much better conceived, much more grounded and stable and sane when it was conceived and brought to page and then brought to camera, as opposed to, you know, even the second season of Discovery that everybody praised as a big improvement. You had the showrunners were fired 6 shows in and that, you know, tweaked a little bit, but
You can feel the tone shift.
Yeah, not near as much as first season, but it's still there.
Right, not as
much. And we were all aware of it, too. It's not like it was a secret.
Yeah.
But Picard is a show where all of that was worked out early, and they did shift the pilot. The pilot was going to be 2 hours. They added some scenes and had a short third section. So the pilot's really the first three.
And when we had
the premiere, I think I mentioned that they showed the premiere was seen as three. And Hanel Culpepper was... Instead of that, every two hours a block for the directors, she wound up with 3, so that there was just 1 hour for one of the directors. But aside from those guys, but that's typical. That's what you expect, the tweaks coming out of the gate with a new show and a pilot and all that. I was pretty much satisfied the way it unspooled. We'll get into some things here maybe. But overall, it's what I thought I was – not specific story choices, but as far as the overall quality and the tone – and what I thought they would kind of do broadly with Picard and some of these character types, you saw them introduce characters finally, and the vibe and the feel and even a lot of the throwaway stuff. I just felt it felt like Star Trek. And also they finally had the luxury of all that chunk of fandom that's been screaming for, you know, go forward, quit going backwards. It's all forward in time to me, but that's me living in 2020. 2161 still was in the future, guys. But I thought they were, you know, they had that luxury of being able to finally project 20 and 30 years ahead. And I thought most of the aspects of production did a good job of paying homage and building on. And some of them I thought did remarkably well, good jobs. So I'm like at 80, 90% with it. And some people are horrified. I don't get the people that absolutely detest Picard. Or
yeah,
I don't understand that. Yeah. Either. But yeah. I'm totally happy with what it was, kind of what I expected or better.
Yeah, I was quite happy with what they produced. It's not quite what I was expecting. I don't know if I was expecting anything in particular.
That's what I mean.
I was expecting that it's not going to be TNG, which is why I said many times that all the fans that are really excited about it because they think Captain Picard's coming back and finally we're going to get TNG again because we don't like Discovery, they're going to be really disappointed because this is not going to be TNG at all. It's more likely to be similar to Discovery than similar to TNG. So beyond that, I don't know if I was really expecting anything specific. I think that because we learned through the pre-release promotions that the Borg were going to be involved, that Jerry Ryan was in there, that Jonathan Del Arco was coming back, and we had those images of a Borg cube, so we knew that the Borg were going to be in there somehow.
I was going to say, even before the images were released, just them announcing Jerry Ryan, oh, cool, yeah. Seven, and then Jonathan Del Arco, Hugh. Gosh, can we draw a commonality here between, I wonder what's going to be, but yeah, then they confirmed it finally. But even,
you know. But the way they used the Borg is not anything like what I thought we would see going in. So that was very different. And what I definitely did not really anticipate, and I say really because there's one caveat, but what I didn't anticipate, and I don't think many people did, is that the story would essentially be a follow-up to The Measure of a Man with Bruce Maddox. Yeah. And like that, I didn't see coming. Now, having Data in there, having it be somehow connected to Nemesis, I could imagine, and the relationship between Picard and Data. But the Bruce Maddox part, I didn't really quite expect. So that was interesting. I said there's a caveat. The one thing is that when they showed the initial images of Daj, I for some reason just thought there's a connection to Data. And maybe it's Data's daughter. I didn't think it was Law.
So it
didn't quite make sense to me how it would be Data's daughter or somehow connected to Data. But I did have that feeling. So that part didn't surprise me when it came up. My general feeling about the story is that I feel like the setup was great. The first three episodes did a really good job of setting up the story that I think they set out to tell. But I don't know that they quite told the story that they set out to tell. Like, I feel like the story meanders often. There are those moments where you feel like they're spending way too much time on certain things. And then there are those moments where they just gloss over things to the point where you wonder, why don't you put more time into this? I mean, Commodore O is a great example. It's a poorly written character.
Right.
It makes no sense within the context of the story. I mean, the idea of her does, but the way it's presented.
And much less the audience, the characters in universe and the audience watching the show, one or the other of us should have had a clue whether she was a Vulcan or a Romulan or a Vulcan Romulan, whatever it was, or some construct. O-O-H? Who the hell ever heard of a Romulan or a Vulcan ever? I'm like, what was the, I haven't had a chance yet to, or, and I haven't read. The other wacky thing about this is the way so many little drips and drabs of you know, Michael Chabon on his Instagram has been, I've been preaching up and down, aside from you too. And I think we got into this, we did talk last time about, I've been preaching, trying to brace the world that thinks they're just going to get more shiny, happy captain on a bridge with adventures every week. It's like, no. And Patrick wouldn't do that. And then he eventually came out and said, he even stole my line where I said, hey, everybody, this is going to be the Loganization of Next Generation. And then later on, he said, I see it's much like the Logan, you know, because it was him in that movie too.
I know what you mean. And I mean, as far as Commodore O goes, well, for me, it was kind of odd because O is a Japanese surname. It's also a Korean surname. And they've got a Japanese,
yes,
an actress,
yes,
of Japanese descent playing the character, and O doesn't make any sense as either a Vulcan or a Romulan,
yes,
name. The moment I saw her, I thought she's a Romulan, and I think that the conversation when Clancy calls her and tells her Picard visited me,
mm-hmm,
and O says, "Hey, look, you know very well that if there were Romulan operatives on Earth, I would know, and then you would know." And to me, that was an admission right off the bat that she's a Romulan.
Mm-hmm.
She's a spy who has infiltrated Starfleet, and Clancy knows that. So she's a badmiral, right? And but that's never explored beyond that, except they have her come out and do the Ray-Ban spot where she comes out with her dark glasses,
yeah,
on, you know?
Yeah.
And credit to many fans who picked up on that and said, hey, that means that Agnes is a double agent. And I kind of resisted that because I didn't want that to be true, because it's such like a cliche,
yeah,
standard writing these days. But
not,
sure enough.
And not, yeah, out of the gate, you know, but after yeah, the rendezvous, yeah, the sandwich rendezvous on the bench on the cliff.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Listening, yeah, to her, yeah, iTunes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she was listening to Cassilian Opera, which is a Discovery tie-in.
Yes.
You know,
so. Deep cut there.
But anyway, so we're going off on a tangent here. But just to bring us back around, I think that overall, I thought it was a very interesting story. It was more tightly crafted than Discovery, mm-hmm, has been in either its first two seasons.
Well, again, the luxury, quote unquote, of having a sane, yeah, writing process without a lot of major upheaval.
Yeah,
right,
right. And I, but the thing is, the way you're producing these shows now, like you're limiting yourself to 10 episodes. The studio, mm-hmm, is limiting the story to 10 episodes. That's an, I know there's financial reasons for it and all, but if you compare it with traditional television, this is an artificial framework that they're creating to tell these stories. We're going to do it in 10 episodes. You don't have to do it in 10 episodes. You could do it in 11, or you could do it in 12. And what I noticed with Picard, which puzzled me, is that for the first part of the season especially, they stuck to this like 44 to 47 minute range for episodes, like traditional, like TNG era.
Right.
You know, we got down to about 42, I think, towards the end of Voyager and in Enterprise, but TNG was around, and DS9 and early Voyager, around 45 to 47 minutes. Why do you do that? You don't have to. You could use 50, and they did later. They have 55-minute episodes later. And so when I'm watching the story and I feel that you're spending too much time on some things in the first three episodes, and then you're glossing over other things, and you're coming in at 47, and you could add 3 minutes, and you could give us a little more background. Why aren't you doing that? That is a little bit odd to me, and I'm sure there are reasons. You know, there are reasons, probably budgetary or, mm-hmm, contractual or time on location, or I'm sure there are reasons, but we don't know what those are when we're watching. And so we're just wondering why the story is unfolding in the way that it is when you don't have the constraints of broadcast television on UPN in particular, or syndication before that, where even though you were syndicated, you still had to create a package that could air
right,
in a normal 1 hour right, time slot, right? So that's sort of my kind of general feelings on it.
I, you know, and that got, it also got skewed when they decided to make a 3-part pilot, quote unquote, and instead of a 2-part.
Mm.
And so they kind of stole from the two ends to pad the middle, and yeah, then came up with the whole flashback sequence on Mars,
mm-hmm,
to, which was interesting, mm-hmm, and was, mm-hmm, a great layer of texture in the story to, you know, the flashbacks were, I thought some of the flashbacks were some of the best parts of the, you know, the original flight, the Mars attack and all that, and a lot, yeah, of visuals.
And,
yeah,
like, and Picard and Raffi.
Yes.
At the time that they get drummed out.
Right, you know, right.
Like, that stuff, that's actually needed, right? That stuff needs, mm-hmm, to be in there, because the stuff with Picard and Raffi, if you read the comic, then you're fine. You know what happened. It's explained. And if you watch the short Trek, you know about the attack on Mars, but you don't really know why it happens. So I think you do need to have that in there. But the thing is, you should never rely on people reading a comic
or
watching a short episode to understand the story. So I think that it's good that they put those in there.
Especially when 10 years later, you're going to contradict your last official comic.
Right. That's true.
And mess up your stellar cartography situation. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. For you, that's
right. Oh, Hobus isn't that. Hobus is this. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, right. The supernova thing.
Yeah.
Is
the whole scope of it. Yeah. But it's on film. You can't, you know, whatever. We can talk about that later. But that's a tiny part.
Well, that's the thing is that it's all canon, but it contradicts itself, and it's not like canon.
This is film canon versus a 10-year-old comic that was, you know, third tier canon, but now in a vacuum, and now we're on film. So okay, we'll go with this.
It's interesting though because see, for me, well, first of all, you know that I consider the literary universe to be at least adjacent canon, right? I know it can be overwritten, but it all ties into my head canon.
Yeah.
But with the comics, however, the thing is, J.J. Abrams, that's part of his whole method of storytelling, is to have supplemental material for what you see on screen. So just like I consider Una's book part of Picard canon,
right,
even though it's a book, I also consider the Kelvin verse Countdown comics to be part of the canon of those films because they were very specifically designed.
Well, and Alex and Bob
to
wrote
set up
them.
Those stories.
Yes, and that was it. Yeah, yeah, but I will still say it ain't real until it's on film. But up until that point, what I always call canon in a vacuum. If there's nothing else than on film, the most authoritative source, then go with that. And if one of the authoritative sources is someone on the creative team did it, you know, whether it's Bob and Alex or it's, I don't know, Jerry Taylor, you know, or whatever. Like, go with that until contradicted later because someone either forgot or somebody else, the political wind shifted and somebody else is doing this now or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I'm totally there. But now it's film trumps canon. That was 10 years ago and now this. But
But that happens with creative work. I mean, you have to give creatives some latitude. So I have no problem with that. Let me ask you a quick question because I jotted this down when you were talking and I tweeted this on Friday. Do you think that if Picard were being made, if we could go back to the golden age of TNG, DS9, Voyager, Enterprise?
We call it the Berman era, Chris. Okay.
Oh, is it the Berman era? It's BE. Okay.
Yeah.
If we can go back to 1996 BE.
Yeah.
When we had 2-hour pilots for Star Trek series, do you think that these three episodes, Remembrance, Maps and Legends, and The End is the Beginning, would have actually been a single episode? Because I think that the story would have been tightened up a bit so that it could fit within the 2-hour format. And I think that we would have just gotten all of that content as the pilot episode.
Well, again, they started off to have a 2-hour, air quote, pilot. And then decided that they needed to have the big Mars flashback. Not that we didn't have a hint about what thanks to the short treks, but that they wanted to see visually what it looked like and how it felt like and how it came out of the blue, how it was a Pearl Harbor 9/11 kind of moment. And also you do follow, you know, the android, you follow him enough to see that he has a norm. You get it that it's not like that. It's obviously a mechanical glitch. Like something is being overridden in the moment. He doesn't come in.
Or something was planted in him and it was activated.
Yes, it was activated. And we all saw Data go bonkers and be called home in Brothers, right? And other times. But they started off not having that whole sequence and it was its own thing and they did it in a very budgetary way. But still, it was a very, you know, what it was like a 5-10 minute teaser or whatever, which right there, you've got a fourth of a short hour. So they took a few bits away from probably the other hours and maybe lengthened some. And they were a little more leisurely about the pacing and some of the other, you know, the other bits too, but to set up the story. But they started off with a 2-hour and they just decided to pad it. But I think it was great to do that just because the more they talk about the synths attack on Mars and that the androids were affected and took, you know, self-destructed the place. They were the fifth column there on the surface, but and in the docks. But to actually see it in action and to see that something happened, like you get this external manipulation factor that you can tell something clicked in. It's almost like, what was that old show? That old show way back when that one end, Arium. when she clicked in, you know, is that whole thing of going along, and then ding, ding, ding. Here's the, you know, how are we going to telegraph that something is happening?
But Larry, remember, you know, with Arium, they spent weeks and months and
I know
years setting up her character,
and that's why it was so damn effective. I mean, we all just ached. Because we'd had so much invested in building up her progress.
Exactly.
I mean, when the Trieste found Arium on that planet. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I'm skipping. Wait, wrong.
But about this, Larry. But one way you could do this, though, is that you don't have to show that whole sequence with that fate. You know, he has F8 on the back of his head.
Right.
With that android. You don't have to show all of that in the pilot. You could just have the attack happen. Picard finds out that it happened, and then in the next episode, the next regular episode, you could then go tell the story of what happened on Mars. So
you flashback backer.
Yeah.
Further back.
You flashback backer.
You flashback further back, yeah.
So there are ways that you could do it. It just felt to me like...
It was too long a pilot? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, not exactly.
Quote, unquote.
I think my feeling, probably the best way to describe it, is that altogether those three episodes, they just feel like the pilot. They're just setting up the story. And at the end of the third episode, they finally leave Earth and they go and they set off on this journey. But you've already used up almost a third of your entire run doing that because you only have 10 episodes. So if you only have 10 episodes, why don't you make the pilot one episode and make it 2 hours? And then you've got 9 more episodes to tell the rest of the story. I think that's probably the reason I feel this way.
You sound like you're channeling the Manny Koto fourth season. No, I don't want to do 8 space Nazi episodes. Let's get the hell out of here and get on with what we really want to do.
Well, Larry, I was... You know, one thing I've been doing during quarantine is I've been watching a lot of commentaries from movies and episodes and such. I even watched one with some guy named Larry Nemechek on there. I mean, that was
a waste of time.
That was an interesting one. I don't know why they let him get on mic and camera, but...
They were simpler times and they were more desperate in the past, but yeah.
They were more desperate. No, but I went back and I watched that wonderful conversation on the Enterprise Season 1 set with Rick and Brannon, where they're reminiscing about the creation of Enterprise and all. And the boy bands. Yeah, I love that story. But one thing here is that, as they said, you know, Manny Koto couldn't do anything wrong. So if you're comparing me to Manny Koto, I think that's some good company right there to be in, because at least I know that I won't do anything wrong with Star Trek.
And what's better is you've got that whole career with 24 ahead of you to come.
I have to ask you, Larry, I was thinking to myself, I can't tell. And you know Rick and Brennan way better than I do. I mean, I've never talked to Rick.
Right.
I've talked to Brennan. But do you feel like they were just joking and being sarcastic? Or do you feel like they actually were a little bit hurt by that fan reaction of like Manny's season of Enterprise is so much better than the three that they did?
I have no doubt that they're a little hurt, but then Brannon did a 5-year, you know, Enterprise apology tour, like in the aughts.
Yeah.
You know,
I remember
or
that.
The early teens when there was, it's like he kind of came out of his shell and went around for ages and kept apologizing and for the finale and for.
Yeah. I remember that.
And for everything. Here's what we would have done differently and all that because. And Rick is, I mean, he's, you know, Rick was really, on one hand, burned. I mean, everybody, things happen the way they happen. And sometimes you're screwed and sometimes you cause it. And sometimes it happens to you. And most of the time it's a mix of everything.
Yeah.
So he was on, you know, it's sad when you go through that. He was on top for so many years and then you're gone. Things turn. And it happens to everybody, whether you deserved it or not. You know, everybody but, Tom Hanks and Patrick Stewart maybe. But to name two. But I'm sure there's a little bit of hurt there.
I was just curious because I was listening to them and, you know, I've watched that.
But it's not like CBS
before.
came crawling back to Manny Koto to give him the keys. you know, right, yeah. to anything future. So
the thing is, Manny's season is wonderful. It's one mm-hmm. of the best seasons of Star Trek, actually. But the first three seasons are also good. They're just different.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just curious. Okay, let's get back to Picard. And so the next question. The ending, I think, probably caught everybody off guard. What happens to Picard at the end of the story? What do you think about the conclusion of the story?
Yeah. Okay. Well, see, you know, overall, I'm fine with it. Now, let me jump back. And I think I should have listened to our first conversation, but I didn't. So I don't remember where we were.
We never listen to our conversations, Larry.
No.
Even when we're talking, we're not listening,
I never listen to the thing you say, Chris. I'm sorry. What was your name again? I remember thinking out of the gate. So they announced Picard. And even before he is saying, hey, I would not have agreed to this if it wasn't going to be something different, because I don't want to do retreads. I don't want to do sequels. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just play the same old thing again. I did that mm-hmm. already. And that's what an actor would, that's what a creative would say. I'll right. do it again if we, you know, but not to bastardize anything, not to neuter it. He's not going to do, mm-hmm. he cares about the character too much. And if anything, the legacy, he's only gotten that the last 5-10 years, you know. It's like, oh my God, these fans, and I'm going to go over and I've got this body of work as a Shakespearean actor, all these other roles. I'll never mm-hmm. forget he played the gay boyfriend in The Birdcage. The first thing after Next Generation, like something right. totally, you know, off the wall, different than Jean-Luc Picard. But he's an actor with this, and he's aging, but in excellent health and wow. still, you
amazing.
Know, yes. Yeah. So it's not like he's going to go quietly off into retirement here. Even if it's for a while there, even if it's, and I say this, it's what he was doing before Star Trek. Even if it's doing stage plays, whether it's Ian McKellen or who he's with, he's totally happy there. He doesn't need to worry about the money. That was the other thing. He doesn't have to do this for money. He's not right. coming back beholden to getting him into his retirement years. So it's not about money, and it's not about ego, really. He did not have to do this. He could totally be a creative decision. You know, I'm not going to do something that bores me or, oh my God, he didn't want to aftermash it. He didn't want to come in and do a sequel that, oh my God, can't hold a candle to the illustrious, you know, and tarnish the reputation of the thing that he did first. So all of that going on, we're there. But then that said, I'm thinking, well, you know, Patrick is what, 79? It's like, well, are they going to truly Loganize this and have it be a season? And at the end of the season, Picard dies. But they at least give it a final, you know, CBS All Access gets a huge moneymaker out of it and they do a season. And I wondered about that. And I was like, wow, you think the tone and what kind of a format it's going to be? Wait till they kill Picard at the end of this season and everybody loses their stuff over that.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere along the way, he or Akiva Goldsman or someone said, well, you know, off the cuff, we think we've got material for 3 seasons. And I went, oh, okay. Then they're not going to kill him off. Wow. Mm-hmm. They're really going to do this. And also by that time, I think they had a handle on, they were starting to get excited with what they were doing. So it wasn't like dreading it. Oh my God, are we going to do this for a second year? You know, I just, what's the Monty Python's contractual obligation album? You know, it's like, right. okay, yeah. I did it. They're fine. Everybody here, more Picard. Bang. There you go. Okay. Leave me alone. Of course I love the character, but come on guys, enough is enough, you know, kind of a thing. So they're feeling good enough about it to already be saying that. So the fact that they did what they did at the end, the way they got to it, the way, you know, Brent plays a Soong because Silvertongue Brent.
Imagine that.
I know, but it's kind of like, okay, you knew he was playing the Data. It's like her playing, you know, twins. It's like saying, you know, here's Volk. Oh, look, he's Tyler. Yes. Yeah. But those things they've gotten good. It's like, I want to know who in Pike is going to be introduced as a certain character. And for whatever reason, the actor is going to wind up playing something else by the end. The regular is going to wind up playing something else by the end of the season. To have Brent pop up as a Soong was bizarre, but it's kind of like, well, you should have known they wouldn't have him just playing Brent as a flashback memory. But the fact that the plot kept revolving around androids and AI and all of that was, you know, but that was kind of interesting. I'll just tell you, you're asking about the finale. I know. I was basically fine with it. I thought once they decide to make that decision, the last scene is kind of riveting. I mean, it's really amazing. I was laughing internally just in a production sense because those, whatever they were, whatever kind of memory storage device, those three blocks. You know, we laugh about isolinear optical. We laugh about the quarter inch plywood, you know, microtape from the original series. It's like those were like play school wooden building blocks that Picard had. It's like it's a simple, totally untextured rectangular solid that he's pulling those out. But it's so dramatic, and the music and the drama, and everyone's standing around like it's a mini funeral as he's doing it virtually. And we're seeing what it looks like inside the program. And all he's doing is pulling out these three, you know, I'm going to slowly withdraw. It's like taking out Hal's memory at the end of 2001 or something, you know. But the fact that they weren't all these gaudy, you know, uber teched, you know, filled with greeblies, as Rick Sternbach would have said, you know, these techified techie things. They're just these simple blocks. But that showed you how powerful that scene was at the end. And it really cracked people up at the, I mean, it messed people up at the end. And then to come back from that and, oh, look, we've kind of got the beginnings of a bright, happy crew on a, except, well, not bright, happy, but a little more healed individually crew. And I know people are going, but shouldn't Agnes be a criminal? And, you know, and what's Seven doing there? Is Seven going with them? And why is Seven, you know, bi or gay now? And I mean, all these things that popped up. It's like, okay, fine. Well, that's your teasers for next season. Okay, fine. And what happened to Narek? Well, the last we saw, he was taken away. Well, we deleted the scene where we kind of saw what happened to him. Is he just gone? Yeah. That's all. That would be sad. But that's kind of far down the list of things to quibble about.
He's still there on the planet throwing rocks at things.
Pushing buttons on a remote control and throwing it around. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did have a whole little iMUD here. How many sets of twins did they have to go find? I could totally went back into Gene Kuhn and Bob Justman casting iMUD for all the twin sets when they got to.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, look, it's an homage to iMUD.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Casting-wise. Yeah, anyway, what I did think was, wait, they put him in an android body.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Because then I got confused. Okay, so was the golem originally meant for... Who was it meant for? And then the last minute change of plan was to put, you know, use it for him, for Picard. But overall, it's like those episodes, even when Next Generation was going to fix the wacky science of the original series. And then in second season, they started having the transporter be used to restore, you know, Pulaski's restored to her age. And we're going to, and they were like, whoa, you could just see Mike Okuda, Rick Sternbach in their tech notes and whoever the science advisors were like, whoa, 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 guys, you're letting the transporter get out of control again. We've got to nail this down. As you did that with Picard at the end of in Arcadia, that it's like, whoa, they're doing this. And then they actually had that little 3 or 4 minute like, haha, fans, we'll cover this. And Picard is asking the questions. Wait a minute. Am I immortal now? Oh, no. You'll still wear out. You know, it was kind of like, well, okay, we've hemmed this in. We haven't let this. That's one thing they did to answer before they let it go. You know, so that was about the time I started to go, wait a minute, guys, what? Okay. But still, it's confounding. People are really upset about that, and I'm going, well, you know, Spock died and was regurgitated from Genesis, you know, so it's been done before. People are upset about it. Nobody said, well, it's not really Spock the last 20 years of his life. Anyway, that's me.
Well, Larry, on the other side of the room, you said that if I have one of these great insights when we're talking, you know, to point this out, and I just had one. So yes, Picard is going to wear out. However, if you go back to the beginning, he ordered decaffeinated Earl Grey. So, in his new android body, does caffeine affect him? Does it matter if he has regular Earl Grey or decaf?
Do, 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 do.
There you go.
Do, do, do. Actually, I'm sorry. I was hoping for better, but okay.
This is a minor insight, but you know, I mean, this is like really, really.
You're going to hang around for you're waiting to see what his first T replicator order is. Is that what you're saying here?
I think in the season 2 pilot, he's going to order T very early in the episode. Yeah,
and say in fact, and not say decaf, so you know that he's feeling his oats as a not android.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I just wait. It's the scene. It's going to be in the season 2 teaser.
I feel young.
It's going to be there.
As when...
tea had as, caffeine in it.
I feel young as when the vineyard was new. Yes, okay. You know what?
And the doctor told me it was okay to drink caffeine.
that part, my stomach has a 5-year warranty on it now, so we can swap it out. Right. It's fine.
That's right.
No, are we going to talk about the rest of the season, though? Because I did have a couple of things I definitely wanted to get to.
We can, but just on the ending.
Broad strokes.
Strokes. A couple things about the ending. So there's the whole conversation with Picard and Data.
Yes.
And letting go.
Yes.
And I thought it was a beautiful scene. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful to see them have that moment together again. And it was truly this time the end of Data's journey to become human. I've always felt that the end of Nemesis worked fine for me, that Data died because he sacrificed himself to save Picard,
mm-hmm.
and that was a human act. That's the ultimate sacrifice. So that was him completing his journey to become human.
You felt you had closure, is what you're saying.
And you had closure.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, it's going to have an impact on Picard. But if 20 years later, Picard is still...
mooning about
to come
it?
...to terms with the death of Data,
yeah.
That's a little bit... odd. I think especially for a man like Jean-Luc Picard, I think he would be able to come to terms with that. So having that be like the impetus for the story is a little bit of a stretch, but I'm also okay with it because they were able to make a good story out of it. But now we once again have to have this closure at the end,
you know,
of the story.
One thing that might help alleviate your concern there about have we just wimpified Picard horribly? If he was mooning over Data's loss for 20 years, I'm going to say that I took it as Picard moved on the way we all deal. Mm-hmm. Most of us are able to deal with tragedy and trauma, mm-hmm. hopefully. Moved mm-hmm. on because he had such a full life. He's mm-hmm. in command yeah. of the Eve for many, many more years. He is transferred and takes over the refugee mission. I'm just thinking that when as happens with people, we're zooming mm-hmm. along or we're free conference calling along, we're rolling along with our lives.
We're free clouding.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. GNDNing, 47ing, if you read the graphics. We're so full of a life. We've got more we can keep up with sometimes to our detriment, but whatever.
Yeah.
And then something happens that everything just collapses, snaps. We're fired out of the blue. There's a pandemic. There's a tsunami. There's a stock market crash. There's a whatever. We have someone dies in our family. Our company goes belly up and it's out of our control. Whatever happens, our life is totally upheavaled. Mm-hmm. Like, not even like where you have a slow crash and you land and mm-hmm. you're, mm-hmm. No, I mean like it blows up, like it blew up mm-hmm. for him. Mm-hmm. He stood yeah. up. It gradually got crazy and crazy and crazy. He finally took a stand. It went yeah. totally 180 the way he thought. He was had the long red carpet that had been out for Jean-Luc Picard for his entire last 30, 40 years of his career was gone. And he's yeah. just in a lump on the floor. He took people with him. And all I'm saying is the shock to the system that is, the life trauma that is. And he goes back and he's just going to nurse his wounds back. For one thing, that's mm-hmm. all he can do. But he's there. Yeah. I'm just going to say that ruminating about mm-hmm. Data really mm-hmm. didn't kick in until he was home alone with his thoughts, getting up, watching Romulans yeah. helping grow wine every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. And to take that a step further, I think that when he met Daj and he realized that mm-hmm. there was some connection to Data that still existed,
right.
then that set him
that was a little bit
off
of a
on
trigger.
His journey.
Yes,
made him think even more about it. Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that's how you explain how this works for the story. Even though some people have pointed out that I don't think Jean-Luc would be.
Worrying
so much for so many years.
There was a lot
of... probably for many years he wasn't.
Yeah, and, you know, I try on my weekly Tuesdays Live commentary, Soapbox, mm-hmm. I would see this pop up because it got to the point where I'd watch an episode when they were running, on Discovery especially, mm-hmm. and Picard too, but you'd watch an episode and then go, okay, and here's my own reactions. And then the next, that night late or the next day, mm-hmm. get up and you'd, I'd see 4.7 crazy things coming out of the internet fandom. People, mm-hmm. Things like, what? No, I never ever thought that. Or no, that's not a problem.
Right.
That's not a problem because A, B, C, D, E from the last 30 years or some other series or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was like the outrage or the shock of the week. And some of them I kind of understood. The first F-bomb mm-hmm. from Tilly, I kind of saw people get upset about that. But it's like, mm-hmm. okay. But again, Discovery and Picard both, I take it back to everybody is still watching these shows like they are anything mm-hmm. prior, their next gen or original series. They're watching them as episodes, not chapters mm-hmm. in a book.
Their expectations are traditional Star Trek.
And you're not going to go darkness to light in 1 hour. You're going to go darkness, little less dark, little less dark, maybe a little light. Oh, now back. I mean, that whole the arc is 10 or 12 or 15 episodes, and we're not used to that. And people that got really upset with, I think, especially Stardust City Rag, but other ones too. I think Nepenthe was the only one that people all loved, except those three people over in the corner that still had things to hate about Nepenthe. But
the Bunny Corn Society, they were not very happy with that episode.
No, they did not like to see the Rikers having meat on their pizza. But, hey, whatever that's fine. I don't want to go down there, but I'm not going to die on that hill. But what I'm trying to say is this whole concept about seeing people get upset about a show and they kept thinking about these individual episodes as individual episodes. And I finally said one week, I said, look, it's imagine if you're watching, pick Wrath of Khan, pick First Contact. The DVD has them, into 10 minute chapters or whatever. There's mm-hmm. 10 or 12 or 15 chapters, quote unquote, of a movie for your DVD enjoyment. Mm-hmm. Imagine that you get to only, you're going to watch this movie for the first time. And every week you get 10 minutes. And then wherever that ends, you go away for a week. And you have to sit with that for a week, whether you liked it, you didn't like it, you liked where the story was, you didn't like where the story was. You thought it was crazy. You thought this character did something that was completely ridiculous for the character or for Star Trek or for Starfleet or for the Klingons or whatever it was. But you didn't get the next chapter until the next week. And then you saw the next 10 minutes and you're like, oh, okay, well, this is moving along. Oh, okay. And by the time you get to the fourth or fifth one, you've totally forgotten about what you were upset about on chapter two at the end, because it's aside from the time going by, it's mellowed out. You've gotten lost in more of the story. The story's maybe answered what your concern was, or you've seen how it's resolved, or you've just intrinsically realized that your worry is, don't worry, we're going to. And finally, by the end of seeing all the chapters, you get it. And you still may have individual critiques, but now you can look at them as parts of the whole story, not flaws within a thing. And I said, that's where we are. And whether the writers are executing that as expertly as could, that's the model. So everybody, it's like, I refuse, unless it's something really, really dire, I refuse to put time and energy into getting upset week to week until you get a sense of, again, unless something really goes outlandishly
left. Well, Larry, that's because you don't know how to use social media properly.
Apparently not. I haven't attacked half of the known world population for some reason yet. So apparently so.
But what you're saying, that's how it is. And yeah, I've been saying that too, that especially with Discovery.
And I'm not criticizing people.
Chapters in a book.
It's like a new muscle we're having. It's the culture we're living in. That's the way everything's going.
I think it's easier for people to accept that watching other TV shows.
Exactly.
Like new shows. But with Star Trek, because we've had so many decades of a certain type of storytelling, it's difficult to adapt. Yeah.
Yeah. People just have a hard time watching serial stories with their Star Trek glasses on. It's like you totally forget everything you've ever known about watching name your short season serial, Game of Thrones on down. So,
the other part of the ending is Picard becoming an android and being put into the golem. And you asked earlier, was the golem intended for someone else? What was going on there? I think after watching it many times, my feeling is that Soong had created the golem for himself.
That's kind of what I thought. Yes.
Yeah. And he gave it up to save Picard because he makes a comment, or I think it's him, but there's a comment in there about what a sacrifice was made, right? And that's my feeling, is that he had been working on that for himself so that he could make the transition to being an artificial life form himself.
I want an android body. I kept thinking of Uhura. Again, all these iMUD references. See, all these iMUD callbacks. You didn't even...
I wish I were a fake boy. That's not to say androids are fake.
No.
It's sort of part of the point of the story, which is very interesting, that, you know, Picard will live on now and he's artificial. And I feel like in this day and age where we are in the early stages of being able to see that there's a good chance that as biological beings, we will make a transition into being artificial life in the future. And there will be a point where biological beings like us are not around anymore, and that we've passed our essence and our knowledge on to our own creation.
I mean, we've been on that track since about, 77, 78? Because, you know, we have the technology.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've been on that track for a long time. We're still a long way from it being real.
Right.
But it does seem like a logical
And all of these android AI EMH issues that Star Trek keeps raising. I mean, it was an interesting end for the season. I mean, I'm just in my popcorn bowl eating moment here. I'm just like, okay, fine. Uh-huh. Bring some more. Now, there's two things I definitely want to say and critique about the season in short things, but they're kind of limited. But are we there yet? Are we there yet, Dad?
I'm not sure if we're there yet. I want to finish on the Golem Picard here, because I think fan reaction was quite mixed about what does this mean for Picard? Like, is this really Picard now? Did Picard die? Is this android Picard actually Jean-Luc Picard, or is this a new being? And I think those are answers that we'll probably get. And the fact that the question's being asked, I think, is the point, right? As science fiction.
Funny how they saved it to leave you with that at the end of the season, huh?
Amazing like that. But it is a great science fiction question, and it's something that Star Trek would address. Like, what does it mean to be artificial? And when you cross that barrier from being biological to being artificial, but your memories have been transferred, how much of who you are is the memory that you acquire over the course of your life, and how much of it is the biological system of your body?
And then when you take that android body with an analog memory grid and then you put it in a transporter that technically kills you and then brings
it
you
kills
back
you every time.
Now you've got, now where the hell are you standing now? What do you know
exactly? But so this is going to be an interesting thing, and it does feel a little bit like, yeah, we wanted to kill Picard at the end of the season, but we also want to make season two because we can make a lot more money, and we do have some more story that we could tell, but we can make a lot more money, right, if we have another season or two out of this. So we need Jean-Luc Picard to be around, so maybe we can do both. Maybe we can kill him, but we can still keep him around.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a very it's like, it's almost like leaving him at the end of a season as Locutus, and you wonder whether you're going to come back. You know, does Patrick, you know, season three, does Patrick want out of his contract? Well, we'll just leave him over there as Locutus, and we'll just kill him off remotely. But as a crass, you know, dealing with a contract issue and an actor in the real world. But it's a science fictiony thing. Obviously, when they felt comfortable, they liked the story. I think it may not have been settled early on. I think they talked about how they weren't quite exactly sure how they would land it. You know, maybe halfway through it started to come together. They had to get out of the gate first and see how the basic story was going to go down, and maybe tweaked it as they went along. But I don't want this to sound like blasphemy, but I'm basically fine with it. I mean, I saw everybody getting off on those existential questions, and I thought, well, okay, I understand that, the questioning and the curiosity and even the debate. But again, the first thing I thought of was, I thought of Spock first. Now, that was the organic Vulcan. That wasn't artificial. Mm-hmm. It was just artificial to everybody but Vulcans. But at least it was an organic mm-hmm. Vulcan thing to do that the ancients did. So, of course, it's got to be Spock or somebody in his family that's going to revolutionize it or expose it as a, you know, whatever the storyline is. It's going to be one of our regulars. It's going to bring it back, put it back in the tomb, whatever it is. But other, you know, Ira Graves, this whole thing about, you know, I'm half kidding about iMUD, but that's what that was all about. Corby, every Star Trek dance with androids, starting with Corby, has explored this and what are the girls made of. And then the iMUD androids, even though it was mm-hmm. a comedy. And then Ira Graves, mm-hmm. it wasn't about androids per se, mm-hmm. but he was working on a body. He was dying and he wanted to transfer his consciousness in. And even mm-hmm. not on the nose androids, but the passenger, I've gone blank on the villain, but was going to instill, you know, was going to keep living on and on and on, instilling his consciousness mm-hmm. into another body. I think organics, maybe. It's not like it's an uncommon concept for Star Trek, much less sci-fi, to get mm-hmm. into. So I was kind of, mm-hmm. I don't know if that yeah. was telling that we've had so many or that they just, you know, and it is kind of the nature of the whole thing about Borg is they kind of dallied with that as an overlapping, you know, Venn diagram of plot ideas. Is the Borg aren't a species. They're everybody else's. They're 50,000 species that have all had tech glommed onto them. They don't reproduce and reproduce more Borg mm-hmm. babies. You know, I mean, it's like mm-hmm. those are transformations.
Right. Well, there were Borg babies originally, but they got rid of those pretty yes. quickly, right? So
yes. Remember, say Borg babies three times fast. That's all I wanted you to.
The babies in the drawers.
So. And the Borg baby on Voyager. Okay. Yes.
So there's one more angle to this, though, that's separate from the existential question. And it's the fact that, so Data completes his journey.
The little they remove the little blocks are gone, yes.
Data's gone. He lets go, okay? But there's also the fact that this story is essentially a follow-up to The Measure of a Man. And in The Measure of a Man, Picard mm-hmm. has to advocate on Data's behalf that mm-hmm. Data is a sentient being right. who has the same rights as right. anyone else and the freedom to determine his own fate. So Picard, and at that point, okay, because that's early season two, Picard hasn't been around Data that long
True.
Yet. So like in
right.
Picard the series, when he talks about how Data was a dear friend, Data was not a dear friend at the time The Measure of a Man
On principle,
took place.
Right.
There are many years to go after that. At that point, Picard was just mm-hmm. very much advocating for the Star Trek idea of equality, right?
Right. Show us your medals. Show us your lovers. Yes.
So what? Data is artificial. He's a machine. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have the same rights as you and me. You know, he clearly is intelligent and he can think. It's not just algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
So Picard has this long history of advocating on behalf of Data and supporting Data's journey to explore humanity and become more human.
Right.
You know, you've got things like them being on the holodeck together, doing Shakespeare. He's always supporting Data. And the end game of all of this, as I see it, is that it's the end of Picard's journey.
Mm-hmm.
He's advocated for so long, and also following the Mars attack, he's telling them, like, look, all the artificial life forms, they're not all bad, right? Like, something happened here with these artificial life forms, but it doesn't mean we shut everything down. And in the end, Picard dies, and he becomes the very being that he was advocating for on behalf of all of these years. And also, it happens at the hand of Soong, the family that created Data in the first place. So that's sort of how I see it and why I'm okay with it, that it's the end of one journey for Picard and it's the start of another journey that he will take in the form of a type of life form that he had been supporting the rights of for all of these years.
With a Soong at the other end of the blower. Well, I don't know why I jumped into Iocean there, but yeah. At the other end of the horn. Yeah. I mean, yes. Yeah. I mean, if you really want to search for, you know, strange new worlds, new life, new civilization, well, there it sits at the end of the table. Went, okay, so this is what they're going to... And people that were up... A lot of people, I think, were just upset structurally. They're like, how can they end the season right there? It's like, what do you think they're going to play with? You know, like, that's going to be... Now you're going to see how this plays out. For all the people that say, you know, wrap it up in an hour. No, this is going to play... And you know what? I don't want to be crass or unkind or anything, but... And I just saw another interview the other day, this drip, drip, drip of stuff. I almost wish we were back in the ivory tower days of Rick, where he would say, like, he would use five adjectives of and with varies. You know, it was very nice and very exciting and very, you know, whatever.
We have very high hopes for next season.
Yes. And I think they're going to be very popular and people are going to be very intrigued by this and enjoy it a lot. And that we do. No, Akiva Goldsman said something the other day about, we've got a 3-season plan and a 5-season plan. But what he's kind of nicely talking about there is people, you know, anything can happen. But, and right now the sky's the limit. Right now everybody is in love with the show. The show is golden. CBS loves it. Most of the fan base is in love with it, still reserving the right to critique it, but it's obviously on all cylinders. Some of us are waiting on the Shabab Larissa, not Larissa.
Oh, Larissa and Shabab. I really want a Larissa and Shabab.
The Romulans. I want the spinoff Romulan show with Larissa and Jabin. Yeah,
the Irish Romulan and the stubborn Norman.
Shabab. Yes, the French Irish Romulan. I'll say that. No, I this whole thing is about they don't know what the future holds, just simply because Patrick is in awesome shape. But, you know, I almost think it was a little meta, some of the early steps when he's with Dodge and, you know, he's panting, running up the stairs, and they played with that a few times, and him on the ship. It was leading up to the moment where he does die and he's putting his, you know, his physical capacity and his mental capacity are going, and Agnes is up there, you know, trying to keep him going long enough to save the day 5 years. I'm sure everybody involved would love to go 5 years. It would break that kind of quasi-official Netflix mold of running 3 years of the show until it's no longer, you know, the old bean counter thing of they sat down in 1987 and decided that if they had $1.5 million budget for every next gen, we could go 7 years. This budget will account this much for inflation for salaries, and that's it. You know, 26 a year. The strike took away 6 in the second season. But otherwise, and then the same thing for DS9, and mostly the same thing for network UPN, crappy little network UPN, it tweaked. But that was kind of the blueprint. And now we're in a whole different business model. And Netflix is showing the way with, after 3 seasons of their short seasons, they apparently, unless it's hugely popular, they'll go 3 years and cut their, you know, that's it. That's where the money makes sense with the budget they're spending. So if they're really spending $8-9 million a month, you know, an episode on these, and you wind up with an 80, you realize that after 10 hours, you've spent, you know, 80 or 90 million. And that's what the budgets on a next gen, you know, a single next gen movie was that much. We should figure that up and measure that in your dollars. Mm-hmm. Just saying, part of what we're this whole discussion about how long the show will run, how they're structuring the stories, is in the uncomfortable real world fact of Patrick, Sir Patrick, and his age and his condition. And he's in wonderful health right now, but we just, as we have seen the last year, we never know what's coming down the next month.
This year, we don't know for anyone.
Yes, know, exactly. Exactly.
What could happen. So, I see. Okay. Well, let's move on to another quick. Well, you said you had like 2 points you wanted to.
Well, I kind of joked about one of them, but I think I've said this before, and I think they've kind of been on the record, and I can't wait to ask myself. But the way I got the idea that coming out of the gate, Spock and Ethan Peck was supposed to be the big story for Discovery Season 2, and everybody loved Anson Mount, and they were excited about having Pike, but I don't think CBS had any clue that they were about to get. They were so used to trying to tamp down the negativity around Discovery that the fact that they had a love fest going on when this character exploded and the actor portraying it and everything fit physically and emotionally, and Anson had been an old fan, a kid fan, you know, that always helps. And I don't think they were quite, they'll take it, but I think they were surprised and blown away with the reaction. And even, you know, to be honest, eclipsing the reaction to Ethan and Spock.
Oh, by far. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So good on them for, and we may have time to talk about this, good on them for the whole saga that's now developed around the Pike show and Strange New Worlds and all that. But that whole reaction is very telling in a lot of ways to the good. But I don't know. I was kidding about it. I don't know if anybody was ready for, and maybe not everybody was, but oh my God, Orla Brady and Laris.
Oh, yeah.
And what she did with that part and the role and what she brought to it. And people were kidding about, the Irish Romulans. But it just felt like, I don't know. I know some people were kind of chomping at the bit after 1 and 2 hours and 3 hours going, when are we going to space? When are we going to space? When are we going to space? And I was like, you know, if they just run around and solve mysteries and crimes on Earth, I could almost go for that. I could almost go for the Jabin and Laris show, you know, whether Sir Patrick is there or not. Now I'm kidding. And I was disappointed that somehow they didn't circle back to them, at least get them in. I remember thinking at the end of the third episode as they, oh, now we're into space now, guys. You can all relax. We are now in space with Star Trek. I'm thinking, well, surely they're going to loop back to Earth or bring them in or shuttle them in or warp them in or vortex them in or do something.
They could have been holograms in the emergency hospitality holograms recreation of Chateau Picard.
And by 100 years later, of course, they would know where the furniture was on the other end of the hollow viewer. They'd be able to completely go in and sit down on the chair that's not really where they are. No, but they didn't. I mean, that was a little disappointment. And I think it was cute to see that rise up on the boards, internets, and tweets and everything, too. Other people had that same attitude. But I'll say this. So here's my biggest critique. And I know she has a fan base. Peyton List has a big fan base out there. Mm-hmm. Very attractive, and I thankfully the bright spot to me in the finale, even though they kind of wound up being, you know, Narissa and Narek all kind of in the end wound up being, you know, I hate to say it, token villains, but to me the biggest waste of time for the season was all the unending dark. Like, it's, I don't know if they were like last minute ads and they decided to get 4 or 5 pieces of, and I have friends that are working in the art department, so I'm not knocking anybody. But some of those scenes where they put a fan in the back in the dark and shot silhouetted light coming out and they put 4 or 5 flats that look like they're trying to be close ups of Borg walls. And they would just have Narek walking along a corridor and all of a sudden Narissa jumps out at him so she can hiss at him in that kind of dark, teen, villainous, angsty, you know, WB way. I just, you know, and for the 9 millionth time, it's like she hisses at him and he stalls for time and she hisses at him again and she stalks around him and he counter stalks and then he hisses back at her and he's like, so leave me alone. I'm getting on with the plan. Your plan is too slow. No, my plan is the only plan that will work. And it was like, okay, for the 9th time, I mean, I thought her very first scenes with O at least made sense. And, oh, look, she's an undercover. Okay, she's at least human and not trying to be, a Vulcan as a Romulan. Well, that's original. But she was at least going, you know, they actually had to bob her ears with plastic. And then the very end, where she had some other things to do and felt like she actually, but for that whole middle half of the stretch, those scenes on the Borg cube, their scenes on the Borg cube were just like a total waste of time.
Yeah.
How many more times is she going to hiss at him and he's going to put her off? And it's okay. Here's the scene in the show where they talk about how she's mad at him and he's saying, I'm working on it. And
Well, I mean, I agree with you in that I did not like the character. The actress is fine, but I didn't like the character. Right. And I thought that whole Romulan.
I don't know what she could have done with that. I mean, I feel sorry for her. And I know she's got a, like I said, I know she's got a fan base and she's done some other great things. I just thought it was a thankless task.
Right. And it's the same with Tamlin Tomita playing O. I felt bad for her actually in the face-off between the two fleets.
Oh.
Because the lines that she was delivering, the writing was horrific. No one would speak that way. And I know you can say, hey, Chris, how do you know no one would speak that way? but really, listen to how you can tell that she's doing her very best as an actress to deliver the material that she has been given. So bless her. I appreciate her as an actress. But the material was horrible. And she was just like generic villain that has to be there to give Riker a hard time because they did nothing to develop her character. And it was the same with Narissa. There's nothing to these Romulan characters. Now, the one defense that you say it's a complete waste of time, I think the point of Narissa's scenes are actually to develop Narek's character. And he does a pretty good job. Like after he leaves the room in the impossible box and he leaves Soji in the room and he sets off the radiation.
Oh, he has. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah. He does a great job of expressing the fact that he might be on a mission, Narissa's mission, but I think he does care about Soji.
Yes, and you get those hints, and I felt a little toyed with, like, which, but there is at least you have a feeling like, oh my God, in the end, is he gonna be the villain that suckered over to be with the good guys, which he kind of is, which but you kind of saw it telegraphed all the way along.
Yeah, which is, it's kind of a problem in the writing of all of these modern shows. A lot of stuff's telegraphed, but I think that, you know, and then he does come back at the end. You know, he's out there throwing the rocks at the ship and all. I think that the point of all those scenes with Narissa are to try to grow his character.
To service
and
him,
his
not
connection
her.
Yeah. To Soji.
Yes.
But when you only have 10 episodes, and this goes back to what I was saying at the start of our discussion, it's a waste of time. There has to be another way or a more efficient way, or you have to make us care about Narissa for that to work. The way it's presented, it's almost like we have this Star Trek story going on, and then we've got this other, like Game of Thrones or something, like thrown in, where because it's almost like she wants to have sex with her brother so often. And I know some people have said they didn't pick up on that, but a lot of other people have said that they did pick up on that.
I called them the Romulan incest twins. Yeah.
And it's just weird. It's bizarre for the story. Maybe you can tell a different story where that makes complete sense. So I'm not getting off on like this is some idea that just can't work in fiction somehow. But in the context of this story, it just feels like a waste of time when there are other elements that you feel like are being shortchanged. Why are we having all of these,
including
her?
Now, I said I think the one bit she got to chew on was the very beginning, the introduction of her, and then at the very end, And I'm not just talking about the fight scene with Seven, but she actually had some moments there that made sense. But that whole middle thing where all she's doing is just snarling at him and walking in and out of shadows, like just popping out like it's some back alley, except we're on a Borg cube.
And that's why I feel like that was all meant to be in service of Narek's character development.
And Narek, at least, of course, had Soji to triangulate off of. And he had, and then by the end, he had everybody to play off of. But she was stuck with basically him. After she lost O in the office, all she had was him until the very end.
Right.
You know? And it's thankless. And I wish they had found ways to do right by her, or do better by it. That was going to be the flow of things. And it felt like it was the token angsty teen Gen Z, we have to do this so we look like, I don't know, a DC superhero show on the, on the CW or whatever.
I feel like in the writing of Discovery and Picard both, it is a little bit of that. I feel like the writers feel like they have to draw on these modern tropes and cliches and ways of storytelling, and that they have to work that in, like somehow the audience is expecting it. And personally, I would rather just see a division there. Like, this is Star Trek. We're going to tell a certain type of story here, and we don't need that element.
Unless
it really is needed for the story. And then you find a way to make it work better.
Just go do Starfleet Academy 90210 and just, finally get on with it, which has, been announced. It's out there. They've even named, the producers attached to it. But,
So... of course, Larry, what we're missing is the fact that it hasn't been announced yet, but there's yet another Star Trek spinoff series coming, which is just focuses on the Romulans. It's just O and Narek, and it's Narissa. Somehow she's come back as well. And it's just going to be all about them and the plan. Like they're going to continue the plan. So it's going to be called Star Trek The Plan.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to be Star Trek Dark Romulans or something.
Yeah, featuring the three of them.
Yeah. Star Trek, Romulans in the Shadows.
And Tomalak's going to pop up. He's going to be like the guest. In an Android body, but he's always going to be on a view screen a little bit too close and in your face. Mm-hmm. So, so to kind of close out discussion of Picard, the other point I wanted to ask you about, because we like to talk about the business side, is just in the context of the franchise, like, what do you feel that Picard has done for the franchise in terms of the efforts that CBS has undertaken to revive Star Trek, to make it more vibrant, to make it viable for the long term?
Well, I think, yes. And quickly on its heels is going to be the animated series and then the Pike show, Strange New Worlds, and then on beyond that. There are more coming. But what it's done, and I think a lot of fandom doesn't get this. I think if people are really, really, really stuck on the Alex Kurtzman has been cursed ever since he touched Star Trek 09. I'll never trust anything he does, yada, yada. And every time I say that, I'm not taking away anybody's right to critique something, but this broad brush, right? I don't like anything post-Discovery. I love the people that find a difference between the Kelvin movies and these, which there are, but people, it's like the minute we got cinematic, I think ever since we left 2005, and it was 2005 was, you know, they were digitally shooting, but it was really an evolved version of 1987. We had the 12-year, well, we had the just a few years gap, and 09 had a movie budget and all that, but it was a completely different take on how to produce the series. And so people lump the Kelvin movies in with the TV now and whatever, but it's such a cinematic looking difference that people lump all that in for the same tone and makers and all that, when it's really just kind of the modern era of here's the way budgets and business models for movies and TV series are done. But it carries over to the fact that so many people are lumping Picard and Discovery together. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. They have critiqued them each separately, but they're totally different critters. And I think Alex Kurtzman had the, he said, you know, we think of Picard as a sci-fi drama and Discovery as sci-fi action. Which not without its tone, you know, its themes and it's all that. But they see a tonal shift there. I think a lot of fandom, until we get 3, 4, 5, 6 series out there, I said this somewhere else, it's really like going to be a buffet of Star Treks, and you might like them all. You might like some more than others. You may not care for, you may not care about the animateds at all, or you may love Picard and not, you know, you may finally love Strange New Worlds if it's going to be, you know, standalones mainly, one or two or three arcs running, but arcs the way we saw it on, you know, oh, Worf is discommendated for all this time. And once a year, Troy's mother shows up, you know, those kind of arcs running. But it'll be a standalone adventure of the week. And, you know, yay, optimism. We get our light at the end of the tunnel comes every hour, not every 10 or 15 hours. And, you know, but it's going to take a while before people get it, that there is a buffet of flavors there. Even as people, you know, the people that are worried about this, and they only see one thing coming down the line. To me, there's already wide differentiation between Picard and Discovery. Even if you don't go to, there's a big differentiation between Discovery season 1.1, 1.2, 1.3 versus season 2 versus and I think season 3 is going to be a completely, I think they may finally get home to what Discovery wound up wanting to be on its own all along, without being shoehorned into, you know, Brian's original idea of being an anthology series that has a different season plot. And CBS is like, no, we're going to spend the money. Let's keep these characters in these roles, you know. But all of that angst and growth and planning and not planning and execution, Discovery is what it is, even though it keeps evolving. And Picard's a different flavor, and the fandom that keeps sticking them in the same box, and maybe they've got, people can cite reasons, and that's cool. But I'm excited to see what comes down the line, because I think eventually, and maybe fans who are newer to the franchise and not so dyed in the wool, because I think people have forgotten how differently everybody saw, well, they do, but they don't think it through. How, you know, there was a certain type of fandom that went with Voyager, and a certain type of fandom that glommed onto DS9, on top of the issues about trying to see it on a syndicated show stuck at 2 a.m. on the Hockey Channel locally, or it's UPN and UPN's a crappy little network and it never will have ratings and they're always on the bottom. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like there were tones and changes then, and obviously fandom was splitting up. We were never as united as Next Gen's 4th and 5th and 6th and 7th seasons were.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like that's all been completely, you know, by the time Enterprise was on, half the world didn't care. They weren't even paying attention. Yeah. Or there was so much competition from all the sci-fi and fantasy that Star Trek had helped create as a popularity boom. But people forget that. But we're about to put that on steroids. That whole thing about here's different flavors, here's different tones. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody thought anything weird about not liking. You either had to like it all or not like any of it. In the Berman era, that wasn't an issue.
Yeah.
And people are looking at that now. But by the time we roll out all these shows and we get to the animated, and then we have two totally different tones of animation. Mm-hmm. You know, we have one that's kind of the Adult Swim of it. And then we have one that's kind of more angsty, not anime strictly, but angsty teen anime-ish with Prodigy or whatever, you know, hashtag Nick Trek, whatever they wind up calling it.
Mm-hmm.
By the time all that becomes apparent, I think we'll be beyond this whole discussion, just the way we finally stopped talking about whether paying for Star Trek is a sin against God or not.
Have we stopped talking about that?
Well, still.
Well, I think overall, you're right.
Hey, you wanted meta big picture, so there you go.
But I'm a little bit skeptical about your prediction that we'll get past all of this, because there's nothing about social media that makes me feel that people will get past of anything these days.
Well, they'll get past this. There'll be something new in 2 or 3 years, but we'll be at least be past that.
Fandom, just whether it's Star Trek fandom or Star Wars fandom or whatever fandom, people just seem to be very upset about things these days, and it seems like some kind of strange form of enjoyment for many of them.
I don't know
if we'll get past that.
I don't know. Maybe somewhere between a pandemic and everything else going on in the world, maybe we'll have a cleansing. Maybe people will come to appreciate their commonalities and not what, you know, divides us. But
so let's talk about Strange New Worlds, because you mentioned a moment ago when we were talking about, you know, the setup of how things went in Picard and how off guard maybe the studio was caught when everyone fell in love with Anson Mount as Captain Pike. I know I did right off the bat.
I did. Yeah.
I couldn't believe, you know, and I thought that going in, I thought Pike's probably going to be a small part of the season. And there's even that setup in the beginning where he says, you know, Saru and I, it's going to be like a joint custody kind of deal, you know. Well, it certainly didn't end up being that way. It was very much Pike. But his portrayal of Pike was just so spot on, I think, for the character, but also for what we expect a Starfleet captain to be. And it seemed very clear to me why everyone fell in love with him. And I know by the middle of the season, I was saying, I really want a Pike series with Anson Mount as the captain.
You and 47 and million other people,
I thought that Ethan Peck did a great job with Spock. You know, we don't really get to see him until well into the season very much. We get to hear his voice and we get the great Spock chase.
Oh my God,
we've caught Spock now. But no, we haven't. Gotcha again. Tune in next week and see if we can catch Spock this time.
You know what would have made season 2 Discovery even better? If Narissa had kept jumping out of the shadows going, when are you going to get Spock? When are you going to get Spock? We're working on it. You're not moving fast enough.
That would have been awesome. And then we could find out that actually Narissa works for Section 31.
And she's time traveling back and forth. Yeah.
That would have made wonderful sense.
She has the green black suit and she's hopping around in it. Yeah.
She's the green angel, right? We've got
green
the red angel,
angel.
We've got the gray angel. And now we've got the green angel.
So. Green angel, will you be mine? Yeah. Okay.
So, but once we really got Spock on the show, I really like what Peck did with Spock. It was in no way an imitation of Leonard Nimoy as Spock. it really felt like a younger version of Spock, and you could see it felt like the same person finding himself, growing into the Spock that we meet later. Yes. I thought it was brilliantly done.
You could totally see him being shouty Spock in the cage. And, yes.
And there is that great moment in the Q&A short trek.
Yes,
and no need to shout.
Yes. You know? Yeah, yeah. It was a great shout out to that homage to Spock.
That
yeah.
was quite nice. Yeah. And so,
you know, when they announced his casting and they said he was the grandson mm-hmm. of Gregory Peck.
Oh,
and
right.
I just went, oh my God. And when I first heard him interviewed and talking, but even in the moment, I thought, well, no, it didn't occur to me. And then when he talked, I was like, oh my God, he's got his granddad's voice. Mm. And Gregory Peck had that resonant, you know, not bass, but a lower mm-hmm. Baritone mm-hmm. bass-ish voice. And mm-hmm. it's like, yes, you can pull off the Leonard Nimoy resonant, you know, mm-hmm. baritone really well too. I'm just like, oh, this is no, the casting continues to be, mm-hmm. you know, some of the best parts of any new Trek. Yeah, all three of those. And when they were first running the Anson Mount side by sides, and even Rebecca Romijn, once they get her into the hair and all that, can pull off a little bit of a, mm-hmm. you know, Majel Tony curl bounce hair bit thing there.
So I'm very glad the studio pulled the trigger on this show mm-hmm. and they're actually going to make it. Like you said earlier, I think going in to season two Discovery, I really doubt they had any plans for any kind of TV show set in that time period with the Enterprise. But great that they're reacting to what the fans have connected with. And I think the cast is going to be wonderful and we're going to get to see, you know, maybe some familiar characters come back. Maybe they can bring, you know, maybe we'll get Yeoman Colt back.
I was going to say,
you know, something like that.
I just want Yeoman Colt to pull off her Scooby-Doo mask and go, ha, kids, just kidding. I really was human all along. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So
yeah,
I think that's going to be really fun. What I'm curious about is what you hope the series will be, because I'll tell you up front what I hope it's going to be. Is I hope that they're going to break with the modern TV format and actually give us episodic Star Trek again.
I think they're saying that. I think they've said that. There were code words in the day one. Yeah.
Yeah. And for it to be optimistic again.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm fine with the types of stories that they tell on Discovery and Picard. And I know that's how TV is these days. But I would love, you know, I think the Orville has shown that there is an audience for a more traditional episodic science fiction mm-hmm. show. And if we're going to have all of these different flavors of Star Trek, then I think it would be fine for them to give us that. And it would certainly fit well with the idea of Pike's mission on the Enterprise.
Yeah, it's going to be like if you do a meme on Uhura's line from Galileo 7, which is one of the lines I love to quote all the time. It's a big smorgasbord, Mr. Scott. I mean, it's like, yeah, when people, I think it's going to take a while. I think people feel like they either feel burnt, like I said a long time ago, unless it's just an absolute, someone's being negative for a paycheck, they're just trolling mm-hmm. or it's a mm-hmm. bot. I will mm-hmm. always relish anyone, you know, their critique, their opinion and all that. If it's a real person with a real heartfelt, even though mm-hmm. it may seem bizarre, you know, as long as they're hopefully civil, but you know, if
civility is important.
Yes, civility is important. I'm not excusing bad behavior, but as far as an actual opinion, well said, I think that's great because everything is so, we talked about being trigger happy and how divided and tribalized and everything is mm-hmm. the commonality still is that people care about this franchise, this show, wherever they came to it. Something keeps attracting people. I was talking to somebody, one of my Portales that I've known for a few years now was talking about, she was just checking out at a pharmacy or a grocery store and she had mm-hmm. something of Star Trek on. And they recognize a young guy, like in his early mm-hmm. 20s, working the checker, recognized it. And he's like, oh, you, it was something that transcended. I don't know if it was a Delta or whatever it was, but mm-hmm. transcended the shows. And they started talking. And she had to tell me, she tweeted it, but then she had to tell me specifically. Mm-hmm. She's like, look, I found someone who came to Star Trek with he loves Discovery and he loves Picard, and he's not seen any other Trek yet. And he was, and it wasn't like he was like, oh, I don't know, I can't, they're too old for me, I can't get into that, it's too painful me to watch that 60s acting, or none of that was there. He didn't know that there was Star Trek before Picard and Discovery. I was like, oh my God, I would love to, can I have a Petri dish and I'll start one and having those be, I love to talk about a sociology experiment in fandom. And then to show them like, oh no, we got to curate this. What are we going to show them first and what era and what show? But that's a fact that's going to keep happening more and more. You know, it's just like the Kelvin fans coming out of the blue when the established fandom, you know, tissed all the things that were clunky and goofy about the movies. And there were plenty, but they were well done on the surface and brought in a ton of fans and kept Star Trek going during the fallow years. So, you know, we've had that discussion before, but we're going to have an ongoing, you know, still we're going to have this mix of people coming in. And the other thing about the Pike show, I said this in jest, when people were seeing Discovery unspool, and then the second season was still a little bit better, and some people were moved to go, okay, this is more like it. Okay, well, Star Trek, they never get good until the third season, ha, ha, ha. You know, when all those memes kicked in, but you still had everybody, either they did not like touchscreens and hologram viewers, or they did not like Alex Kurtzman, or whatever it was, or I've been forever burned, I'll never get over this. You know, seeing the ray of light come down and people starting to get it. And we're just going to, it's going to happen more and more. And the Pike show for people, oh, I said at the time, look, if nothing else, they're competing in the world of Game of Thrones and The Walking Dead and all these angsty shows that are out there and this dystopian view. I know it. You probably know it. I say this from time to time. If somebody had the wherewithal to jump up and do an original series or a Next Generation shiny, happy crew in a shiny, happy bridge on a shiny, happy ship having shiny, happy adventures with dramatic. I'm not saying it's bland and stupid, but Pollyanna. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Versus Discovery. We know that we still like that, but that feels like it may be a bridge too far given the world they think they're supposed to attract an audience in. And when some brave soul, either a fanboy or girl, has enough clout and they get the keys, whether it's under Alex or on a sidebar or what, and they do a show and it breaks through, that'll be awesome. But I don't think that's going to happen. What will happen is as they keep rolling out new shows, and by then we knew what the pattern was, we didn't know what they were. I said, watch this. So we've got, you know, Discovery, Picard, we have two, and by the time we get to, oh, I don't know, show six or seven, somebody in the think tank of the moment is going to jump up and say, I know what we can do for a new show. How about we have a bright, shiny, happy crew and a bright, shiny ship with bright, shiny adventures? That'll be radical. That'll get some attention. And everybody will go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And two or three of the wise fanboys in the corner of the room will say, yeah, yeah, let's do that. That's new and radical. And the rest of us will do the Wrath of Khan line. Now that's more like it. You know, but it's like, you know, guys, so hang in there. Hang in there. They may just have to work through this and get this out of their system, but we'll get there. And then lo and behold, the day they announced Strange New Worlds finally, and Anson Mount is saying, you know, I just want to let you guys know, I am looking forward to giving you Star Trek that's optimistic and future looking. It's like he was dropping those code words. He didn't say old fashioned Star Trek, but he said something like getting back. I don't have the quote handy. Getting back to Star Trek that is optimistic and forward looking. And I went, I wonder if those are code words for wink, wink. We're going to give you old fashioned Star Trek, which is what everybody always thought Star Trek was anyway. Not old fashioned. That's what it was. Although you can make a case for DS9. You know, the darker, grittier show was darker and grittier, but people, that's all getting, you know, glossed over now. So the day that came out, I thought, wait a minute. And I started counting up. Okay, you've got Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, the other animation. You got Section 31. Oh, look, this is show number 6. I was right 2 years ago.
Right, exactly.
See, this is the radical new happy show coming. So anyway, all that to say that I can't wait to see how it goes and looks like. And
Well, you were right, but I hope that the other guy that was sitting in the back of the room that raised his hand and said, "And we can have boy bands play on the ship." I hope that he does not turn out to be right.
What's weird is how the unemployment line for ex-UPN studio executives was crossing the front door of that same room. It was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
All right. So
boy bands.
So that's Strange New World. I'm looking forward to finding out more about the series as it's developed.
Oh, you didn't mention anything about whether Jeffrey Combs should play Dr. Boyce.
Ah, yeah, I do remember that story. I'm always...
It was fun for the moment. You know, we're filling in dead time, so yeah.
Yeah. You know. I'm always game for Jeffrey Combs playing any character. So I love Jeffrey Combs.
Can Jeffrey Combs play this computer monitor in the... Can he be a chair? Can he... yeah. He could, and we'd love it. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would love that if they brought him on. He's been great in everything. I loved his role on the 4400 where... You know, connection back to Star Trek, and they brought him in. And,
one better. You know, one of my campaigns, one of my soapboxes, and I did this with Harry Judge at Vegas last year, was we came up with the hashtag Time for Teller Prime. How about in Strange New Worlds, they let Jeffrey Combs play Boyce and also play the new recurring Tellerite character finally?
Exactly.
Yes.
And Yeoman Colt.
And Yeoman Colt, once she takes her alien head off and looks human again. Yeah, I think he can handle all of that and more.
And then underneath that human look is Jeffrey Combs. But it doesn't quite look like Jeffrey Combs, right? So Jeffrey Combs is playing the human that's underneath the current Yeoman Colt alien headgear. Yeah.
Who looks a lot like Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar Allan Colt.
Allan Colt, yeah. Check it out. It's a it's a descendant of... Right.
All right. So we've run down Picard a little bit on Strange New Worlds, and then we talked a little bit about the other series that are to come. So I think we've covered kind of like everything that we had on our outline for today. Is there anything else you feel like we must touch on at this point in time? On the Ready Room?
I don't, except that I think the Klingons will sing songs someday of the battle of the Discovery crew trying, of the post crew trying to record the last few episodes soundtracks in separate. I mean, horrible situations push technology to revolutionize, and so much of the show could be done. You know, the editors, the CGI people, the writers can all be. The only thing that's actually slowed down and starting the new season of Picard, much less the startup of Strange New Worlds is, and of course the animateds are all people sitting down at desks too, whether they're together or not, they can at least do that all. And the voiceover people can record theirs separately. So they're not really harmed at all by this. Well, in some ways it's a little slower, I'm sure, but how we're reacting to the pandemic and all of this and Hollywood, you know, not to get political here, all this struggling with how to come back from the pandemic and all this empty debate about when businesses would open up, and nobody forgot to invite, you know, consumers to the party on that. And they're all kind of voting with their not feet. Yeah. And but the most of all, the entertainment industry and the whole issue of, you know, they've had, and just to say here from L.A., they've had the governor here in California, Newsom, and all the industry people and, you know, union people and management and producers. They've been having these meetings along and they're trying to come up with ways to reopen and get people their show. All the different kinds of, you know, there's reality shows and soap operas and game shows and 1 hour dramas and sitcoms on a stage and all the different, you know, all those different kinds of formats and the way people interact. But there's still, you still get down to people not 6 feet apart talking to each other. You know, you want to recreate that. It's more complicated than they've come out with some things like, oh, look, craft service will now give you your donuts in individual containers and not, you know, off a plate. Well, that's the easy stuff. This other is still there. And no one, crew, actors, no one is stampeding back anytime soon. You know, short of a vaccine or something. It's the same as consumers in stores. So this whole thing about how long we're going to have to wait for, you know, wrapping up Discovery will be one thing, but how long we finally get to see season, which is sad. The clock is ticking mm-hmm. on a lot of things here. And the delays are, we're all putting up with delays, and it's affecting people's lives and pocketbooks and everything, our psyches. But, you know, as far as us selfishly in our little Trek circle here in Trekland, it's affecting that too. And we're just going to have to wait. But how they're wrapping up and individually recording, you know, instrumentalists to get the soundtrack done someday. I hope CBS is documenting the hell out of that, however they can do it, you know, for future.
Well, I mean, yeah, it can be done. I have friends who are recording artists and, you know, classical, right. like orchestral recording artists. And it's something that's done, but it's not the normal right. way of doing things. And so, yeah. Obviously
and we're talking 30, 40, you know, 30, 40, 50 piece orchestra for the major
right.
pieces.
Yeah.
That's.
But, you know, there are always opportunities and challenges, Larry. And for the seventh Star Trek series, Star Trek 6 Feet Apart, it's like, it's the perfect opportunity for this series. It's timely. We're already under the prime conditions for shooting it because people need to be 6 feet apart. I mean, the bridge, you remember the Vengeance and Into Darkness, how big that ship was?
Yeah.
It's like that kind of bridge. So there's enough space for everyone to be 6 feet apart.
I'm sorry, Chris. How is that different than any bridge since 2009? It's like cinematic Trek means you can drive tractors across the bridges
That's
now.
Right.
You could. No, I'm just waiting for your new show. I can see there'll be a moment of tension in every episode. Captain, we're losing integrity on the socially distanced field. What?
Yeah, exactly. Captain, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. We have a vinyl collapse on deck 4. A vinyl collapse on deck 4. Force fields activate immediately, please.
Something's gone wrong with the distance dampers. I cannot explain it, sir. That'll be the, mark my words, the distance dampers. That'll be there. And by the way,
that will be there.
It's distance dampers, not distance dampeners, because that would be water and that would be silly.
And also, there'll be an episode like Shuttle Pod 1, except the two crew members will be in quarantine for 14,
14
parsecs.
Days.
I don't 14. Know. They're going to be in quarantine together.
I don't know. Chris, maybe
sheltering
it's time.
In place in the shuttle pod.
Chris, maybe it's time we go into quarantine.
I think so. I've already been through a 14-day quarantine because of this, like a legitimate 14-day quarantine plus the 3 months of staying at home. But anyway, yes, we're getting a bit silly now. But
now?
Yeah, we don't know when we will see Star Trek Strange New Worlds, obviously, because they will need to shoot it. But thankfully for Discovery, I think all the footage is shot, right? We've got to figure out how to get the music in there and the rest of the post done. And that will probably be out before too terribly much longer, I think. All right. So, Larry, I always ask you at the end of the Ready Room, what do you have coming up? You know, where are you going and all that? Obviously, you're not going many places anytime soon, but you do have a lot going on.
Well, I have been going places in the sanity or the insanctity of my mind because we've all switched to virtual, and I've been talking a lot about that on Tuesdays at Tuesdays Live on my Facebook hour at 1 p.m. Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern, every Tuesday on my Facebook page, Larry Demajek's Trekland. That's been interesting. But, you know, the virtual panels have been, there was a convention recently that vendors organized. People are keeping up right now with the GalaxyCon in Florida. They're putting out things, agents. There was like this, I mean, I talked about this in March. I kind of had it was like, oh my God, once Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle went down and then WonderCon the next week. And I was like, well, this will get us at least into summer. And the unthinkable was going to keep happening. Yes, your local convention was not going to happen this year. Yes. Even Granddaddy San Diego Comic-Con was not going to happen this year. Yes, it took a while. It finally happened 2 or 3 weeks ago. But yes, Star Trek Las Vegas is not going to happen this year. So, you know, whether the early ones tried to postpone to fall, and then after a month or two, they're like, well, that's just silly. We're not even going to mess with postponements. This isn't going to happen. We're just going to skip the year. This will be the year of the COVID. This will be the Corona crazy year, and we'll just come back in 2021. But, you know, I said, one of my topics one Tuesday was, will virtual save fandom? And that's kind of where we are. Not just fandom sanity, but, you know, actors and guests and agents and vendors' income streams. Because a lot of people, as with other industries, the live event industry and our conventions are hurt really bad. So kudos for everybody for stepping up in this. You know, we all got Zoomified or whatever we're using, and it applied to this too. But in the rush to get actors talking to people, and a lot of it free with, you know, upsells, you can add on people, but a lot of things are, the silver lining there is that people are getting to go that never got to go to a convention before, and they're getting, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, some of these rooms, you see people kind of squeeing like it's 1984 and they're going to their first convention because they're 12. Only now they're 50 and they've never gotten to go before, had the wherewithal. So it's amazing. And I keep wondering how much of this residual is going to carry forward once we are quote unquote normal and live again. Mm-hmm. But in the middle of all this, some vendors got together, the folks at Science, Kayla and Jake at Science Division that do the automated tribbles that are licensed, got together and did a convention online called Connected Community Con 2-3 weeks ago. But it was mainly the vendors, and we had virtual vendors rooms. Everybody had a Zoom room, and there was a list of how to the links, and you mm-hmm. could quote, you know, walk virtually mm-hmm. and talk to people in the different rooms. And they had, and Sid, Alexander Sadid did a welcome, and then we had some, there were some panels. Allie T. Truckee on Twitter, she did a panel. I did some after party trivia. There was a musician. But this whole experience, you said, what are you doing? All the travel is shut down. There are these things are popping up. And I just, so Granddaddy San Diego Comic-Con, as I call it, is put out a call for, you could pitch pre-recorded panels. So no live, no interaction, but I recorded a panel for them that's going to be three generations of science advisors, which is what I was going to pitch live, and it wound up going this way. So we have Naren Shankar and Andre Bormanis and Dr. Aaron McDonald, the last three titled formal science advisors on episodic Star Trek TV, all mm-hmm. three of them, starting with fifth season Next Generation till now. We had a panel pre-recorded, which was awesome. So I moderated and got them through that. And that's coming. But all these virtual things, I just did one day. My friends Neil and Jaina did a Comic-Con one, and we had some Trek people in, and we did that today. So I've started and stopped one project for the COVID times called Nonfiction Friday, but we had our last episode. But I'm very proud, since I talked to you, Dr. Ali Mattu, who some folks have seen around, he did some Comic-Con bits with
Dr. Drea. He's a real doctor, right, Larry?
You're way ahead of me, Chris. apparently, our reputation has preceded us. But yes, so Dr. Ali and I started a failed panel from WonderCon, a canceled panel from canceled WonderCon. Mm-hmm. We were going to talk about mental health in Picard. I don't know if you noticed this, but there were a lot of mental health cases. Yeah. We didn't even talk about that a while ago.
What was the broken pieces? I mean, it's the name of an episode, right?
But yes.
Those are the characters
of
the show.
Yeah. But we decided to turn it into a lost panel, turn it into a series. And I'll just invite everybody. It's 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. British summertime, 7 Central European summertime. You figure out what your time is there. But Dr. Ali.
What's that Enterprise ship time, Larry?
It's 04700. In stardate hours of a fraction of a percent, if you must ask.
Yeah.
No, we call it, our mission is boldly going through uncertain times, and it's Star Trek with a mental health lens. And before you get scared and spooked by that, it's very light. We have a lot of fun with it. We have Star Trek examples. We have a different theme. We let people on the Facebook page help us vote the theme every week. Mm-hmm. So go to Life Support Live on Facebook. We multi-stream it, so we're on live on Facebook, which is where the most chat community is, and then YouTube. So I'm building up my YouTube channel. So at the same time, I say, hey, everybody, come by, watch us. You can chat. You can get on Skype and be on camera with us at that time. Every week we have a different theme. We go to Star Trek references. But Ali winds up doing some real-world notes, and he does as a counselor's log, and then we have an away mission. After we start off with a briefing room, we go through all the Star Trek things, the Star Trek references that fit, then go there. And I started a feature I call the K3 Factor, which is I do a real deep, a Trekland Portal 47 type deep dive that connects some real deep dive Star Trek geekery trivia behind the scenes with our topic, our theme of the week, you know, whether it's anxiety or sleep issues or prejudice or gatekeeping or guilt. I mean, some aspect but we make it applicable to everybody in their daily lives. So yeah, the tagline is boldly going through uncertain times, and people can, it's interactive and we're it's growing and we've got big plans for it. And it'll still be a camera show, but we're going to start releasing, because they're a little long, we're going to release them as podcasts too, as audio, because they work just fine as audio. So that's been a big push. That I enjoy doing Nonfiction Friday, but we decided to pause on it. And of course, I've got a YouTube channel now, so if everybody can go by and, you know, as they say, ring the bells, like and subscribe, just Larry Nemechek on YouTube. It would be awesome, guys. I'm way behind on building that up, and I would love all the help getting the viewer subscribers up. Of course, Portal 47 is still out there, and anybody listening, I have a Corona Time Portal 47 special. If you go to my LarryNemechek.com page, click on the link, or just go to Portal47.net. It's a short time. Not a whole year. It's a short time, 3 months for the price of two. But you can get in and get a free month and see what it's all about and not commit, because this... I don't know if you noticed, Chris, it's kind of crazy out there. No one quite knows what's even going to happen next month, much less three months from now or 6 months from now. So,
yep.
So yeah, that's where I've been. I feel like I've worked harder the last 2 or 3 months and got less sleep through stress or work or otherwise than I have the 3 years before. It's crazy. It's crazy. It is. I know you've been working your tail off and trying to keep up with things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm the same. I mentioned earlier in the show that I, you know, lost my job, my contract, you know, because of this, but I still do the magazines as a freelancer, and because of budget cuts to freelance writers and stuff, I've worked probably three times harder, like more hours in the past 3 months than I normally would. And it has taken quite a toll on my mental health. So maybe I need to come talk to you and Dr. Ivy about that.
But, you're welcome anytime. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy right now, and no one knows what is going to happen a month from now, or certainly further out than that. It's just everything's so uncertain. But it has been very wonderful to see the Star Trek actors and the creators connect with the fan base the way that they have during this time. I mean, these panels with the casts of different shows. Kate Mulgrew was doing this thing where she would get on and talk to fans. I think she's doing the last one maybe this past
her
week.
Her team, she was like, they have a draw for six people, and they'd all be in their little sort. Yeah,
and I mean, it's amazing, because that's the kind of thing that maybe would never have happened if not for something like this, because once everyone is isolated and we're not able to see each other face to face, and many people find extra time on their hands because they're not able to do the things they would normally do. Not everyone's inundated with extra work, although many people are. These you know, new ideas for things come up and that maybe you would have never had time to think of before. And I have seen so much great stuff within our fandom, within Star Trek fandom, connecting fans with the creators and those who portray the characters that we love. So that's been wonderful. It's, you know, one of the positives of what's going on, which we need to find, because there aren't a lot of positives, but at least there are some.
Right. And I mentioned this earlier on too, was imagine if we'd had this pandemic 10 or 15 years ago.
Oh, God.
When we're still fairly modern, maybe we'd all be like madly emailing each other. I mean, this at least being able to have these, you know, virtual panels and virtual conventions and this contact, you know, forget fans and actors, just our friends, just our daily circle of people, we're still able to connect. Hopefully, people think, and I think, sadly, I think the world is coming to grips with those who felt like the big thing was to push forward. It's just made the pandemic response worse here in the States anyway. Most of the rest of the world that were smaller countries and maybe a little more compact, and I don't want to make excuses, but it's a factor, but whatever. Yeah. It's like, no, I mean, we were sitting here thinking, I don't care what they say. We're not, you know, my wife's working at home. They're not in any rush to go back. I'm do most of my work at home, and we've got this virtual component we can work through.
Can you imagine if it were 20 years ago, before broadband was widespread? I I really don't know how right. society would continue functioning.
I don't know how we would have kept our sanity.
We are very lucky that we do have this infrastructure now that works well, and we're able to keep going. So
it was under a lot of stress at the beginning, and to their credit, all the streaming companies and digital companies jumped into up the grid. And and all the if you happen to be connected to an app like Zoom or whatever it was called and spelled lately, people were jumping in to upgrade and all the competitors to upgrade that capacity too, and you know meet the chipper what Zoom bombing was, and you'll forever remember the right. first because as you said, a lot of us I didn't do business yeah. through Zoom, but I had a lot of training and coaching through. Business coaching through Zoom the last few years mm-hmm. and through free yeah. conference call and through some of the other platforms out there. But so much of the world never heard of any of this until March. And now everybody's an expert.
yeah, right.
And everybody
yeah,
yeah. gets the Saturday Night Live parody, you know, and everybody gets the yeah. whatever it is now. And it's how the world has turned and changed is amazing. So that is a silver lining.
I just had this image of Spock from the beginning of the original series looking at the screen and going, up the grid?
yeah. The audio.
All right. And I think somewhere in there you told people, right, find you on Twitter.
Oh, at Larry Nemechek. Yes, Nemechek. That's a simple way. Yes.
And of course all your Facebook stuff that you talked about. So if you want to find me on Twitter, my username is C Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere on social media, but I'm mainly active on Twitter. And as for what I have going on, I don't really have much going on in the podcasting space at the moment.
Hey, I was glad to see you tonight, Chris, and hear you.
Yeah, and I
that's
was
a lot
glad
going
to see
on.
You as well, Larry. It's, yeah. it's been a while. I mean, we do chat, you know, offline, but we haven't sat down and talked like this right. in quite a while.
It's kind of hard to smile in Twitter, too. I mean, you can put an emoji down, but the stresses true. Of the world are such yeah. that it's, yeah. So this is...
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, again, I don't know what the next month or two or three holds, but mm-hmm. I hopefully will be podcasting a bit more soon. I have to get work under control because I always say how stressful and overwhelming my work is, and it's become far worse during this pandemic, but hopefully there will be brighter days ahead. And so we'll see. But I'm glad that at least for tonight, we could get on together and talk about Picard and Strange New Worlds and Star Trek in general. But as much fun as it's been talking about all this, it's not the only thing that we've been discussing on the network this week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
Not wanting to be spoiled about this book, I would suggest then not listening now, read the book, and then come back later. And then you can enjoy the whole freaking feature of this glorious analysis that we're going to give this.
I shot JR. Sorry, I thought we were getting into spoilers. My bad.
I don't know. I just, like, woke up from a dream. I was in the shower.
Ugh.
The Orb.
But if you think about the fact that Sisko is with the prophets at this time, and Section 31 is going to try to kill the prophets, maybe that's a way for Sisko to re-enter the story and play his role in representing the prophets to overturn what Section 31 is trying to do and to champion that idea of Druidic and end the season with that message that religion is fine for those who want to believe it, and it's also fine for you not to believe it.
Earl Grey.
One of my notes I made on this episode is that Riker is a cosplayer. He likes to put on the native costumes of the planets he goes to.
Yes.
Ewan, I have started making a Riker Angel 1 cosplay. Ewan wants it for SLB.
So. Nice.
Yes! That was one of my notes as well, was Riker's left nipple.
Doesn't leave much to the imagination, but yeah.
To the journey!
Quick snap poll. Suzanne, would you prefer Neelix yes. to cook for you or Chell?
Chell.
Chell? Zach, Neelix or Chell?
Neelix.
Oh. Oh.
I see Leola root in your future. Lots of it.
Oh yeah.
Give me those exotic ingredients. Yes.
Chell is my man.
I mean, you can have with Chell, you can get like all those pun food items that he made.
Exactly, it would be like Bob's Burgers in space.
Wow.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts and also on our website. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. There are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join the larger conversation, of course, is in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If not, just type the whole name, the Babel Conference, and you'll find it. It is a closed group. You'll need to answer some simple questions. Please do answer the questions so that I can let you into the group. And if you'd like to send email, you can do that. Just go to the website, trek.fm/contact. You'll see the form there. Choose the ready room, and that message will come directly to us. And you can also find us on Twitter and on Instagram. Our username on both is trekfm. And we have a main page on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And if you'd like to support the show, all the shows on the network help us keep Star Trek discussion coming. We could very, very much use your help, especially at this time, on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can get all the details. We have various perks for you. You can become an associate producer. You can join in the Patrons Roundtable, where you get on mic with hosts and other listeners and discuss Star Trek. And other perks. It takes a lot of money to run this network, and we're actually having a bit of a struggle right now. So if you do enjoy our Star Trek discussion, we really could use your help. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. And I really do deeply appreciate all the support that we get. Any support you can give us does help, and I hope you'll join the team. And I'd also like to give a thank you to the associate producers of The Ready Room. These people have given us wonderful support over the years. Norman C. Lau, Renee Roberts, Zachary Fruling, Sam Piasek, Tom Robertson, David Schufer, and Ju Kim. Thank you so much for your help. And I look forward to bringing you many more podcasts in the future. Well, Larry, I'm sorry I've kept you up very late local time for you there in Los Angeles. It's evening here in Tokyo, but it's great that we could talk about Star Trek for a while.
Hmm? What? Hmm? Oh, yes.
So you already fell asleep.
I'm just teasing.
I knew it.
No, I guess so. Yeah. It's time to stick a tan kalank in it, because the ready room is done. It's interesting because on one hand, I work at home, but that my time's away, I'd go have lunch with people, or you know, we'd have meetups somewhere, or I would have work, or I would have an interview somewhere. I mean, I would interview someone or be interviewed or whatever. Or
right.
We had events here. There are groups in LA, our screenings that we did with the Impro Studio, and we all co-sponsored our Trek Files recordings. We did almost all of them live and have the guests come over. We only did two of them remotely. Yeah. And, you know, thank God we can do remotes and keep going like everyone's doing. And on the other hand, I've led Portal 47. It was this radical, cool new concept to have a group meeting with guests globally online. In 2015, that was pretty radical. And now everyone is Zooming. Now everybody's doing it. And it's still about the content, not the technology. But it's funny to me how, you know, the rest of the world is caught up in a lot of ways, to the point where we even, you know, Saturday Night Live, and we have reunion episodes of shows, and people make fun of the, but we're past that. That's the other thing. Is every month has been like a generation. That was March and April. And then May was, let's open up. And then a lot of us saying, what are you doing? And look at the data. And now the reality of what we're really dealing with is setting in. But it feels like we've gone through a generation of reaction and attitude, you know, every month.
The Zoom thing is interesting, yeah, because everyone is Zoom now. But, you know, we've been using Zoom on Trek FM for about 8 years, I think. 7 or 8 at least. So when we started working with Zoom, they had, I believe, just changed the name to Zoom because the original spelling was Xoom.
Oh,
I remember
okay.
an executive there telling me the story, and they, you know, changed the name because I think that name was already used by someone. But that's how far back we go.
A PBS kids show, if I'm not mistaken, but that, no one wants to remember that.
Maybe.
No, we're going to Zoom. Okay.
Oh, is that
yeah,
that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a tech product or something that was using it too somewhere. But anyway. But anyway, people are not here to listen to us talk about Zoom.
Wait.
They are here to listen to us talk about Picard and Star Trek.
Okay, hold on. Let me change my notes then, because I had 5 pages here on Zooming.
You have 5 pages on Zoom. I know. I saw the cover of that notebook, Larry, and I also thought it was weird that you changed the usual greetings from Trekland poster behind you to one that says Zoom with the big Zoom logo on it, and
yeah, with an X, which I'm a throwback. Really bizarre. Guy. I'm just a nostalgic.
It's classic. Yeah. Your original series on that for sure. It's like Zine, you know?
Yeah. Or TOZ, as we call it, the original Zoom.
TOZ, yeah. Yeah.
Original, actually, it was TOX. But
Tox.
TOX, but yeah. People confuse that with toxic, yeah. And I don't want to go there. Yeah. There's enough toxic out there. But gosh, Chris, yeah. Maybe we should go in the ready room
anyway,
and start.